to live righteously. It's time for another episode of the Cultural Hall. It is episode number 378, and we are talking with Justin Coulson. Now, I'm not sure how this works, because this interview is done via the internet. Now, are you hearing my words in reverse order because you're in Australia? I know that your toilets are different, but am I coming in clear, Justin?
I don't even think the toilets are that different. Like, yours flush circularly. I've watched that happen.
Right,
but
right,
ours
right.
just kind of, ours just go, poosh, and it doesn't go in a circle. It just goes straight down. So your words coming in, I'm understanding. I think it might be the spirit, gift of tongues, but yep. I'm hearing it.
Oh, okay. That literally, here's my knowledge of Australia, just so you know. This is where we're coming at. One, the toilet thing, which I already exposed, and it is true, though, that they go opposite direction than the Northern Hemisphere, right? Is that how it works?
From what I hear.
Yeah,
I've never actually sat there and watched.
Yeah.
I haven't. Next time I come to Utah, I'll compare it to what I'm used to seeing here, and I'll let you know.
We have a phrase here in Utah, instead of stop and smell the roses, it's stop and watch the toilet. So I'm just throwing that out there as an option for you.
I'll share that one at dinner with some friends when I'm over there later this year.
Yeah, would you mind? So that's one thing I know about Australia. Two, obviously, the good day mates and all the stereotypical, you know, down
unders. We need to work on that, Richie. We need to work on that. Okay, so it's g'day.
G'day.
You sounded a bit English at the end. You said, oh, it's g'day. G'day.
G'day.
And we say g'day, mate.
And I know, like, dinky die and all those things, right? Isn't that a word?
Yeah, it is. It's kind of a bit 1960s, 1970s.
Okay.
I don't think you'd walk down a street in Australia anymore and hear anyone say that something was dinky die.
Yeah.
But we certainly know what it is.
But what does it mean for those who are going, what?
Well, if you remember General Conference just recently with Elder Vinson, dinky die, if someone's dinky die, they're fair dinkum.
Yeah. It's fair dinkum. It's dinky die of fair dinkum.
I watched Twitter explode. I watched Latter-day Saints in Utah go, fair dinkum. Like, what is this fair dinkum thing? Fair dinkum. It's fair dinkum. And it just means it's legitimate. It's the real thing.
My grandparents served a mission in Australia, as a matter
wow.
of fact. They did not attend my baptism because they were serving a mission in Brisbane. I gave them a pass because they were doing the Lord's work, but they served in Brisbane.
Yeah. I'm in Brisbane. That's where I live.
And that's all I know. The rest of Australia, you guys have some great beaches, lots of fires. most of the people live by the water. That's it. That is my Australian knowledge.
Well, and the water keeps us safe from those fires. we've had some pretty rough times recently, but fasting and prayer and rain have helped us a lot.
Let's pick that up because I know for a lot of people that was a thing that saints in you know all over picked up and said, hey, you know what, we'll fast for the end of the fire with the Australian saints. What was it like in country having that experience?
So the fires, like anywhere, you get fires where there's a lot of bushland.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'd probably be more likely to say forest in the US, but we call it the bush, mm-hmm. The forest. Fairly unpopulated areas, generally speaking. The fires don't come into the major population zones. So most people that I know right around the country were relatively unaffected from a fire perspective. But in terms of the smoke, in terms of the cost of life, the cost to animals, mm-hmm. and just our landscape generally, the cost was enormous. I mean, we burnt parts of Australia larger than many European nations combined. I mean, the fires were absolutely extraordinary, and so frightening for those who were involved with it. And I'm certainly not downplaying it. It was a really significant event.
Sure.
But you know, we've got a land that is known as a sunburnt country, and fires have always been part of what we experience. It just happens to be that there's been a horrendously long drought and everything's tinderbox dry and it went up pretty badly all over.
Yeah, it seems like the conditions with it. And I want to make sure everyone knows we're going to talk about Justin, who he is and why we're even visiting with him. But it's just such a unique thing. It seems like every condition in all of the news stories were just prime for like, hey, it's a tinderbox. And now most of Australia is burnt. And I think that that's a little hyperbole, but also like you said, like nations in Europe smaller than the area affected by the Australian fires.
Yeah. For the average Australian, we haven't been affected, but we've been affected emotionally and psychologically, and there's been a tremendous outpouring of donations. The fast Sunday that we had in January, I love fasting. I have such a testimony of it. And the area presidency asked us to fast on the first Sunday in January. By Monday, there was rain and fires were going out. And we'll always have these issues, and there are still fires burning. You know, there's always a fire burning in Australia somewhere. Right. But that's just part of what happens. It's the same with the US. It's a big place. Our geographical sizes are pretty similar. I think we're a fraction bigger than you.
Of course you are.
In terms of land mass, that's right. And so, you know, fires are just part of what happens in big countries. But we fasted on the Sunday, and by the Monday there was rain. I just thought, how good is our God? He hears our prayers. He responds to them, and he gives us what we need. We may not get everything that we need wrapped and, you know, placed on the doorstep with a bow, but we get what we ask for when we ask in faith. And it was such a testimony builder to go through that experience with the 100,000 or so Latter-day Saints who are in Australia.
So tell people the story about how it came to be that we are chatting now half worlds away, and you're a part of this episode for the Cultural Hall.
Yeah, sure. So I was on Twitter, and I've recently had a research. I'm one of those people who doesn't follow anyone on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
I just let people follow me.
Yeah, one of those guys is what I like to call you. Right. Oh, he's one of those guys.
I don't have time for everyone else's stuff. Yeah. I just want them to take on my stuff. But recently, I've really been enjoying listening to a number of LDS podcasts. I've really been enjoying watching what's happening on social media around the church. I'm a lifelong member of the church. And I accidentally stumbled upon some of your tweets, and you happened to be saying, I'm looking for interesting Latter-day Saints to talk to. And I thought, well, I'm not interesting, but let's talk anyway.
Yeah. But bring it on.
Yeah, let's do this. I've got some stuff that I think a lot of Latter-day Saints would be interested in hearing about. We care about families, and that's my area of expertise. So I reached out, and here we are.
So you dropped this already, a lifelong member of the church. Where did the Coulson family find the church?
Yeah, my parents joined the church when I was a two-year-old. They were both from non-religious backgrounds. My dad's parents had a level of affiliation, but it was fairly low. My mum's family were unreligious, non-religious. They came together, had me, got married just before they had me. You know, it was the 1970s. They never really should have been together, my parents. When you look at how their relationship was, it was very volatile. And mum and dad were estranged. They'd already separated. It was only a couple of years into the relationship, and it was over as far as they were concerned. Mum was living in the house that they'd just built. Dad had gone to live somewhere else. Missionaries knocked on the door, you know, white shirt, dark tie, black badge. And mum invited them in so that she could set them straight and help them to know that these young men were deluded.
Yeah, led astray. Let me help
you.
Yeah,
yeah, pretty much. So, you know, she was well-educated. She had her university degree, and she was a professional woman raising a toddler on her own and doing it all, 1970s girl power. Sat down with these missionaries, and something about what they said brought her toward them rather than pushing them away. And over a period of a few months, mum accepted the truths of the restored gospel. She felt the spirit strong. And during that time, dad moved back into the house. And he actually said, if you join that Mormon church, you'll never see me or Justin again. He was very upset. And so one night while he was at work, mum snuck off to the chapel and was baptized. And when she went to pick my dad up from work, he was doing a shift that had him finishing at 8 or 9 p.m. Her hair was still a little bit damp from that, and she committed her first sin. She said, when he said, how come your hair's wet? I just got out of the shower. She just couldn't bring herself to tell him. But over the subsequent months, as the missionaries kept on visiting, mum eventually told dad that she had joined the church. And once he got over the shock of it, he would allow the missionaries to come into the home, and he would sit in the living room and blow cigarette smoke into their faces and go into the living room and turn the music up loud so they couldn't talk properly. And then somehow, somewhere along the way, they managed to talk to him about the church. And a short while later, I think about 4 or 5 months later, he was baptized a member of the church. So I don't know too much about those missionaries, but I do know that because of them, my family is together. My parents stayed together. I'm the eldest of 6 kids.
Oh my gosh.
And when I look at the impact that the gospel of Jesus Christ has had in my life, I just thank heaven for those missionaries and for the things that they put up with, and for the Spirit touching my parents' hearts. Such a gift.
Do you know who they are, what the elders or sisters' names are?
My parents do, and they've visited them in the U.S. They've gone overseas to visit those missionaries that had an impact in their lives. I wish I could remember, but it's been too long now.
Huh.
I just remember one of them is in San Francisco. That's the best I can give you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just such an interesting thing in a day and age like we're able to connect and be able to speak oceans apart. What a, you know, an interesting experience that those missionaries who, you know, maybe never knew what happened to the work. Obviously, they knew that your parents converted, but those, it sounds like, are a couple of different sets of missionaries. But to know that you still remain active in the church and that you're doing what you do now with your family, I think that'd be a worthwhile endeavor. I'm not the boss of you. I'm just saying, might be worthwhile to track that person down and have that conversation.
Well, I love your counsel. I think that it's worthwhile too.
It's been interesting. So this is a side, and I didn't even realize I was going to do it, but one of the guys that I was able to teach on my mission, he has a daughter that's almost mission age, and it's blowing my mind knowing that she'll likely serve a mission, and that in some way that, you know, in some very small way, obviously, but in a very small way, had an impact to where that family is. I'm going to do the thing where I'm like, hey, I want to talk to you about your life because I was able to teach your father. So kind of interesting.
I think that the gospel and the purpose of our life is actually very much about this idea of connection.
Yeah.
We're designed to have these, to have this brotherly and sisterly love. We're designed to be so close to each other. And when you hear stories like that, it actually bonds you, doesn't it? It mm-hmm. brings you closer. It wants you to, it makes you want to connect even more. And, That's certainly the experiences that we've had. The church isn't huge in Australia. We've got about 100,000 members. Obviously, activity levels waver. And so, you know, my kids, my 6 daughters, I have 6 girls. Can you believe that? Listen to you.
You poor guy and those poor men that come when it's appropriate to be able to take those daughters out on dates. Everyone. I just feel a tremendous amount of a little of anxiety, and then I don't know what the other is.
You know, I hear you poor thing all the time. People tell me how poor I must be. And financially, let me tell you, they certainly have an impact on my wealth. but I feel so grateful for them. And each time we decided to have one more child, we made sure that we wanted to have a child. We didn't want to have a boy. We didn't want to have a girl. We wanted to have a child. Mm-hmm. We don't feel poor. We don't feel disadvantaged. We don't feel upset or like we've missed out in any way, shape, or form. These girls are just delights to us, and we're so grateful for them.
How old are they?
My oldest is 20. She's married and moved out.
Yeah. So you got one done.
That's right. And let me tell you, I don't know if she's going to hear this podcast or not, but the house is so much quieter. Life is so much smoother with just one child, even the eldest. Now that she's gone, everything's just so calm with 5 kids.
Yeah.
The next one's finishing her senior year of high school. We call that year 12 here in Australia.
Okay.
She's finishing that at the end of 2020. Then we've got another one who's in 10th grade, which I think you would call in the US, I think you'd call that a sophomore?
Yep, our sophomore year would be 10th grade.
Yep, great. Then we've got one who's just started grade 7, one who's in grade 5, and our little baby girl started big school. She's 6 this year, and she's just started big school just recently.
And you're not going to claim it, but that's daddy's favorite, I can tell just by the way you're talking about this 6-year-old. Maybe it's because she's the youngest, and you're experiencing it for the last time with each things that she does, but she's dad's favorite. It's cool.
You know, they're all my favorites, and I'm going to hold that line pretty tight. But there's something that happens, and anyone who's had a bunch of kids will probably relate to this very much. There's something that happens as your children grow up. You start to appreciate what they're going through differently as you experience it the second, then the third, and then the fourth, and the fifth time. So as we're watching this baby girl grow up, not only are we realizing that, you know, she just recently lost her first tooth, and we're going, oh, this is the last time we're going to have a child who loses her first tooth and goes through that excitement of that. But we're kind of at the point where it's not too much longer and she's probably not going to fall asleep in our arms anymore.
Yeah.
It's not too much longer and I'm not going to be able to pick my kids up and run around the room with them. All of these things, and we're savoring it differently. I don't know that she's our favorite. I think that's probably overstating it, but we're definitely experiencing her childhood differently, knowing that this is the last time we'll go through that.
And I only say favorite because if any of your kids listen to it, I wanted them to get a little upset and let them yeah. and then be, hey, yeah, wait, wait a minute, Dad, that is Dad's favorite. How dare he?
They come to me at different times and they say, I know that I'm the favorite. They all say it. I love it.
It must be a thing we do with dads because I don't do it with my mom, but all my siblings also with Dad go, but I mean, really, I'm the favorite, right? Like, right. Like, really?
Right. Really? And you're the only one that has received the yes, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. No, I know it. I'm my dad's favorite. Other people claim it. They just, it's not reality. Six kids. Where did you meet your wife?
YSA convention.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, shortly after we were married, we were doing a bit of a count of all of the couples that we knew who got married from that convention. And, you know, we counted 20 or 30 couples that we knew personally who, out of that one convention on the Sunshine Coast of Queensland at the end of 1996, going into 1997, that were married as a result of that very convention. It works.
Now, is that like what... like we would do here in Utah, which would be just like a big like regional activity. Like it's all the saints calling all single LDS people in the country of Australia, get to Queensland. We're getting together and there's speakers and dances and service and all that stuff.
Couple of states. It wouldn't have been the whole country. It would have just been two of the states combining, bringing all the YSA together, 400 or 500 YSA and doing all those things that you've just described.
And you were just like, oh, that's the one right there? Or was it a slow burn? Did you have to wear her down a little bit?
Yeah, people talk about falling in love all the time. We feel like we grew in love. We feel like our friendship was this thing that that really developed into what it became. Funny story, apparently, I have no recollection of this. I wish my wife was with me. Kylie's just taken one of my daughters so that she can do her driving test. We're crossing our fingers she gets her license because that's a second one we don't have to worry about then.
You have to worry about her, but in a completely different way than...
worry about her even more.
Yeah.
So if Kylie was here, the story that she would tell, I'm not telling this about myself, this is the story Kylie would tell. We're doing a service project and I'm painting Fred Flintstone on a window. The outline's already there because I can't draw a stick man. I can't draw a refrigerator. The outline was there and I'm just painting by numbers, painting Fred Flintstone on the window of this child care facility place. And apparently there were five or six girls all sitting around in a sort of a semicircle on the other side of the window watching me paint. I have no idea why, but apparently they were there. And Kylie saw that they were doing that and asked why. And apparently they were just enjoying watching me paint, which I think, again, is I have a hard time telling this story. This is really Kylie's story to tell. I think I was being objectified, Richie. I think that's what was really going on there.
Well.
Yeah, I think. Anyway, so Kylie watched them and thought it was a little bit sad. So she walked straight into the room and started chatting with me while I painted. I don't have any recollection of this occurring. I don't remember the girls being there. I don't remember the conversation with Kylie. But when we did in Australia, when we pick up all of the trash. So in Australia, we call it rubbish. And we put the rubbish in the bin instead of putting the trash in the
can. Yeah.
So we do this thing that we call an emu parade.
An emu parade?
Yeah, that's right. Okay. This is fair dinkum. Okay.
It's fair dinkum.
Yeah. So an emu parade is where you stand up in a line and everybody just walks across the field and picks up whatever's in front of them. And that way you don't miss anything. Rather than saying to four people, you go and clean the entire field, everyone just walks across the field in a line. It's an emu parade. We pick up the trash, throw it out.
Why is that called an emu parade? What's the etymology of that? Any idea?
I have no idea. I guess maybe once upon a time somebody saw a bunch of emus walking in a straight line.
Okay.
Yeah. I no idea. No idea where that came from. And so Kylie and I got to talking during the emu parade, during the rubbish pickup. And while we were doing that, I thought to myself, gee, this is a great girl. I really, really like this person. And so I ended up dating her and we got married. I think we dated for maybe a week and a half.
Oh, really?
And I proposed, yeah. And she said, let's do this. And yeah, now we're up to about 22 years of marriage and 6 children. So it's starting to get a bit serious between us.
You know, this seems like if you're going to have a non, like, go to BYU LDS dating experience, like, this seems like what it would be, right? Like, this is how they do it in the Southern Hemisphere because they can't get to BYU. What you do is you have an emu parade. You call it rubbish.
Right.
You say, oh, you're great. Let's get married. Yeah, okay, sure.
I think our story is a little unique. I don't know too many couples that have done it quite like this. But, you know, I know that we're going to talk about a whole bunch of other really important stuff soon, I know. But when I came home from my mission, I just wanted to go surfing.
Where did you surf?
I served my mission in Australia. I served in the Adelaide, Australia mission.
What's the difference for those who don't know? What's the difference between like Brisbane and Adelaide?
Yeah, so Brisbane is over on the east coast, about 3/4 of the way up. I guess Brisbane geographically, again, because you know we're about the same size, our country and yours. It's about where New York might be.
Okay,
maybe a little further south, and Adelaide is right up through the center.
Okay.
So Adelaide's in the middle at the bottom, but the Adelaide mission goes right up through the Northern Territory to the very top at Darwin, and it's pretty much a great big straight line right up the middle. I don't know your inner states quite as well.
That's all right. No one in America knows them either. We just kind of go in the middle. It's Nebraska. Is that one? Is that one of them? Nebraska? Sure. That's fine.
Yeah. So that's where I served my mission. Best mission in the world. I'm so sorry for everybody else, but best mission in the world.
Sure.
Came home from my mission and I just wanted to surf. I wanted to hang out, have fun, get on with my career. I was going to be a radio announcer and sat down with a guy who had also served in my mission. And he said, no, we've got to get serious about dating. And he was pretty serious about it already. He'd been home a little while longer than me. And we talked about these ideas about what was most important as we were looking for somebody who could be a potential marriage partner, a potential wife. And we decided on 3 things. Number one was spirituality. And that doesn't necessarily just mean belonging to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Right.
Rather, it's about having those core values in common. You know, how do I feel about honoring the Sabbath and how do you feel about it? How do I feel about paying tithing? How do you feel about it? Mm-hmm. How do you feel about temple service and how do I feel about it? What about, it used to be home teaching and visiting teaching. Are you going to support me in that or am I going to have to fight to be able to do it?
Right.
So spirituality is about a lot more than just, yes, we both go to the same church and we're going to work towards a temple marriage.
Yeah, taking it one step further, it's even like, how do you have a relationship with God and does that matter to you and how do I? My wife, you probably don't know this just from listening to the one episode that you've listened, is not a member of the church, but she meets me. She goes to church with me. That was something that I said, hey, this is important. I'd like you to do with me. But also, she makes me, not makes me, that sounds weird. She helps me to be a better member of the church because she is very intentional in the way that she comes at it, a belief in God. And so when I'm just doing something because that's how I've always done it, or, you know, I'm checking a box as far as the church goes, she'll say something like, why do you do it that way? And in those times where it's been like, because, oh, yeah, hang on. Let me figure out why I do that way, and then I'll get back to you.
I love the intention behind that. I had that thought while I was serving a mission. There were some missionaries. This is a terrible story to tell, but there were some missionaries who they would go and do the grocery shopping on P-Day.
Mm-hmm.
And as they loaded the groceries into the boot of the car, do you call it a boot? The car boot?
The what?
The trunk?
The trunk.
As they loaded the groceries into the trunk of the car.
It's fair dinkum, pal. Don't worry.
they would bless the food for the week then.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, that's economically, I mean, that's really efficient. But I think that that's not quite why we bless the food. And then I remember around about the same time that I heard about those missionaries doing that, my companion blessed the sugary breakfast that we were eating.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what sugary breakfasts you have in the US, but this was a breakfast that was pretty much sugar. You know, Australian breakfasts aren't quite as bad as American breakfasts, though. We don't have marshmallows in our breakfast.
Yeah.
we tend to not put chocolate into the breakfast. But anyway, this was a terribly sugary breakfast, and he asked Heavenly Father to please bless this food that it will strengthen and nourish our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, we're actually asking something here that is inconsistent with the design of the food. This food is not designed to strengthen and nourish our bodies. We're asking God to perform a miracle every time we eat this food, if this is what we're doing. And I'm kind of thinking that if I was Heavenly Father, I'd say, you know, there's other things that you could eat in the cereal aisle, or I don't know that I want to bless that food.
Or have an egg, or maybe a piece of toast.
Maybe. And so you talk about your wife helping you to be intentional. These are the sorts of things that I love to play with, these ideas. And so I've got this thing in my home, and I'm not saying this is church doctrine, okay? Mm-hmm. But I've got this thing in my home where we don't bless the food.
Okay.
We give thanks for the food, unless we actually need a miracle performed on it, at which point, you know, and this never happens when my wife cooks, but sometimes when the girls cook, I'll look at it and I'll say, I think tonight we need to bless this food. I'm a little bit worried about this one. Because we've got the capacity in a land that has such an abundant amount of prosperity and healthy natural resources and all the good food that we've got. We've got the agency to go and actually find the food that is going to strengthen and nourish our bodies, and it's our job to give thanks for it. Anyway, that could be the doctrine according to Justin, but
yeah,
it's about intention. You know, please bless the hands that prepared it. Well, what about the rest of the body? Why is it just the hands? We're just blessing the hands. Come on, we can do better.
It is symbolic. You're being too literal, Justin.
Right? Okay. Maybe I am.
I do like the idea of asking God essentially to make wine from water when we ask to nourish and strengthen us based on a sugary breakfast. I want to take a break for a quick second. I want to come back in the second block, and I want to pick it up with you, your wife, and then we'll get into you professionally. We're getting there. We're taking a walkabout. That's an Australian thing.
I like it. Yeah,
there it
well
is.
Done.
I got there. We'll do that coming back in the second block of the Cultural Hall. I want to take a quick second and talk to you about Best DJ in Utah now in its second year. Last year, I went to Washington, to Roche Harbor, and did a gorgeous wedding. This year, I'm slated to go to Moab, to go to Denver to do weddings. And guys, it couldn't be going any better. Thanks, in large part, to folks like yourself, people who are listening to this and say, you know what, I need a wedding or a mobile DJ for something, and then reach out to me. You can go to bestdjinutah.com. You can find me on all of the social medias at Richie T. Stedman, or you can certainly just send me an email, Richie, R-I-C-H-I-E-T as in tough guy, Stedman, S-T-E-A-D-M-A-N, @gmail.com. I would love to see what I could do to make your event that much better. Whether it's a party or the biggest day of your life, you need the best DJ in Utah. And like I said, it doesn't have to be in Utah. It can just be the best DJ in Utah. I don't know. Now we start to get into like the technical things. It's bestdjinutah.com.
Imagine running a small business today. It's challenging. Imaging and internet presence is an absolute must. Even with that, you're still a small star in a bright cyber universe. Now, imagine you have someone who understands how to get your site designed for your talents and then easily searched by potential clients. Imagine Lennon Design. Whether it's strictly a website or a whole package of logo creation, advertising media, and promotional materials, Lennon Design is your partner in business. They'll test the boundaries of their imagination to create something unique for you. When you need creative, affordable design, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Time for the second block of the Cultural Hall. You love what we've been doing. You want to get more of it. You want to get episodes in advance of everyone else. You want to be a part of the sacred but not secret Facebook group. Well, then you have to become a Patreon subscriber of the Cultural Hall. You can go to patreon.com/theculturalhall. And with a pledge as of little as $3 a month, what do you call your dollars in Australia, Justin?
Yeah, we have dollars.
Okay, perfect. They call them dollars down there, too.
We do. We have dollars.
You can become a Patreon subscriber. We would love for you to do it. It helps us to do all sorts of fancy things like this conversation that's able to be done over Zoom. It costs money. That is Zoom, not the conversation. And that's one of the things that money from Patreon goes to. Go to patreon.com/theculturalhall and consider doing that. Why don't you all? Justin, breaking news. Daughter got the driver's license. That's pretty rad.
Just happened. Just got the text message.
She didn't now do driving. That while she was driving, did she? Because I feel like that's already setting herself up.
Got the
poor
text
choices.
Message from mum. Ah, yeah, my wife sent the message.
Okay. Where were we in all this? I'm having such a great time with you. I think that this episode may go a little bit long because we just kind of go here and then we maybe go on a tangent a little bit and we come back. It's a delicious tangent. Don't get me wrong.
Well, you're too kind. You're too kind. We were talking about why I married my wife.
Oh, yeah, so, yeah.
We were talking about spirituality and then we went on to a tangent about blessing the food and all that kind of thing.
Right.
So spirituality was the first thing. There were two other things that my friend and I came up with after my mission that were really important in finding a marriage partner. By the way, this is not, I'm not bossing you and telling you what you should look for. This is just what worked for me. The second one was compatibility, got to get along. The third one was magnetism, got to think that we're, hot.
Yeah.
I got to like her, she's got to like me. We got to be physically attracted to one another. In whatever way that works for whoever.
Mm-hmm.
But after a couple of months, so I dated maybe 14, 15 girls in about a few
months. In a couple of months? Good for you.
Yeah, but it was very platonic. It was just, I'd like to go on a date. I'd take this girl on a picnic and we'd get to know each other. And I look back and think I probably embarrassed myself more times than not. And I can understand why they didn't really...
Well, I think it was the checklist on those dates when you would say, I'm wondering how we are spiritually. Oh, okay. No, this seems to be compatible. Now, what about hot? How hot do you think I am? And they're like, not. Nah. Okay, well, it might have been the checklist on those dates that was a little bit too much.
The ratings were bad. I mean, it wasn't like I had it on a Palm Pilot. I didn't have my Excel spreadsheet or anything like that, but I was definitely looking at these things. Anyway, a Sunday afternoon after church, I was sitting at my parents' balcony. My parents at the time lived near the ocean, and I was watching the ocean waves roll in from about a mile away and just thinking, gee, this list, this spirituality, compatibility, magnetism list, it's not really working for me. I've been doing a lot of dating. It's not happening. What's going on here? And my two sisters had their BMX bikes on the balcony. And I looked at the BMX and I thought, I wonder if BMX could stand for anything that could help me with this quandary, this conundrum that I'm experiencing. So I write down all the names of all the girls that I dated. And I mean, this is so embarrassing in hindsight, but it's just what happened. And I wrote down, I put a column for the spirituality, a column for compatibility, a column for magnetism. And I actually scored each of these girls out of 30. And there wasn't a lot of variability in the scores. And I thought, what could BMX stand for? Let me add a fourth column. It can be BMX. I thought, this is the be more exceptional column. Does the girl that I'm thinking of make me want to be a better person? Does she make me want to be more exceptional? Now, I've since discovered that there's actually really great research around that shows that when we find ourselves in a relationship with somebody who does help us to want to be a better version of ourselves, to be our best selves, that our relationships tend to be better. And you indicated even that for yourself in your relationship, your wife is helping you to really be intentional about the decisions that you're making. She's helping you to be a better member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Yeah.
And so I added that column and all of a sudden there was a huge differentiation between the girls. It seemed like that was the magic for me. And it happened that I just started dating Kylie, my wife, and her score was high. and I thought, wow, there's something going on here. And so we went on another date or two and I asked her to marry me. And she said yes, and that's the end of the story. Well, that's the beginning of the story.
Well, and the thing that I think is so unique about your story is that, some people, and I thought this was maybe an Australian thing as I studied this about you, but it's just based on the story. Like here in the United States, we give a ring when we propose, but when you got down on one knee and gave her a BMX bike, I didn't understand why you would do that. And she probably didn't either, but she's like, what's this about? And you're like, no. Okay, so there's several columns, and I need you to know that you are my BMX. Want to go for an eternal ride?
You are good. Yep. Gosh, you're good. Yeah.
So she said yes, I presume.
Yes. Yes, she did. No hesitation at all. I was surprised.
Really?
Because we barely knew each other. We'd been dating we'd known each other for a couple of months, and we'd been dating for weeks. I think it was 10 days or something like that we'd been dating. So it was a really, really big surprise. I've just had a visitor come and join me. This is my 5-year-old.
Hello, 5-year-old.
She can't hear. I have headphones in.
Oh, yeah.
And she's showing me, she's just lost her tooth. Angel, that this is that moment. I don't know whether you,
yeah, this is that moment
where the newsreader is crossing live to the guy and the kid interrupts and that sort of thing. Bobby, Daddy's talking to Richie.
Can I watch the TV?
Can you watch TV as soon as I'm finished? I'll come and sort it out, okay?
Okay.
Right, off you go. Shut the doors when you go out, please.
Your office is so cool.
My office is cool. I've got the air conditioning on.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll sort it out soon. Let Daddy get back to this, please. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Close the doors for me when you go out.
She just gave you, she just gave you the biggest eye roll ever.
Sorry about that.
No, you're fine. What you just get is gave me an image for this episode that people can see at theculturalhall.com. When she right. when she That's shows good. Us her tooth, that will be the image for this episode. Unless, of course, you're like, don't show my daughter on the internet.
That'll be fine.
Cute. Are all your daughters as adorable as that one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a problem.
Blessing and a curse.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely just delightful.
So she says yes, and then how long is it till you're married?
So we had about an 11-month engagement. Kylie's parents did not want Kylie getting married at that age. They wanted her to be at least a year older.
Uh-huh.
I was just getting my career started. I was going to be a radio announcer.
Mm-hmm.
So I proposed. I was unemployed, a recently returned missionary with essentially no education and no future who wanted to be a radio DJ.
Yeah.
And apparently I was going to make a living doing that. And Kylie's parents just said, yeah, wait a while. So we waited 11 months. And that was good counsel in hindsight. We were a little perturbed by that, but we lived in different states. And it meant that for that 11 months, because this was in the days where the internet was just becoming a thing. I mean, uh-huh. we're talking about 1997.
Mm-hmm.
So I organized for myself to get a Rocket Mail email address, which I didn't know what email was at the time.
You just knew you needed it.
I just knew I needed an email address. And we basically we still wrote letters. Kylie has kept all of our letters, and we have a big journal full of all of the letters that we wrote during that 11 months of our what would you call it? Our betrothal, our engagement.
Your courtship.
Our courtship, yeah. Yeah. So that's how we did that. And boy, I tell you, it gave us such a great foundation of friendship for what has become a beautiful marriage.
Well, and teaches you how to communicate and be able to, you know, you can have really difficult conversations or really frank conversations if you're having them written. I think there's a little bit of courage that maybe you get in the written word that you wouldn't get being face to face with someone else.
There's probably that, although we didn't really have anything difficult to talk about.
Yeah, not saying that you did. I'm just saying sort of as a bigger picture for other people who are able to experience that that long distance, like you hold on to things differently than if you are, hey, I'm just going to go over to the house and we're going to spend some time. Like you cherish, I think, that interaction a little bit more.
Yeah, and we couldn't hug and kiss lots. We actually had to just become friends.
Yeah.
And that was so powerful. It wasn't a physical relationship. It was actually a friendship.
Yeah. But she still thought you were hot. I just want to point that out there as you as you're talking about the compatibility and her courageousness and going up and talking to you and all the women fawning over you as you painted by number.
I can't believe I shared that story. No, I feel so bad that I shared that story.
Listen,
gosh.
You know what? If people haven't checked it out yet and they're listening to this, you can go to theculturalhall.com. Justin is a handsome gentleman.
I'll turn it up. Gosh.
And for anyone else, like you folks down under have the advantage just because of the accent, right? Like Australian women, like she could be an American like 4 or 5 and you give her an Australian accent and she's an American 9 or 10. And I'm horrible that I'm saying that, but everyone...
I'm going to leave that one right there for you, Richie. That one's all yours.
Anyone who can be honest with themselves will be like, yeah, he's right.
Okay.
Give him a little bit of an accent. So so they were wise in that they said, hey, why don't you wait a while? And you were wise in that you decided, man, a radio DJ career will be something that will not quite pan out for you. So how did you did you pivot to what you do now? Or what was the... what was the grown-up, I've got to provide for my family because I just got engaged trajectory like?
Yeah, so I actually stayed in radio for until my late 20s.
Really?
I probably did 7 or 8 years and worked my way to one of the biggest radio stations in Australia. I was working at Brisbane's B105, where we played all of today's best music while you work.
Yeah, and you can still hear it too.
Oh, there it is.
Playing all the best music.
Yeah, so I was working at this radio station where we got all of the perks and whatever global celebrity was in town, I'd sit in the studio and interview them and hang out backstage with them and go to the Brisbane's best restaurants with the record company executives. I was living that life, but we had a couple of children and my eldest was a three-nager, the baby, the one who just got her driver's license, mm-hmm. amazingly. She was brand new, just an infant. And some of the things that I was being asked to do on this radio station left me morally conflicted. One of the big ones that really brought things to a crux was Sex and the City was the big TV show at the mm-hmm, time. Mm-hmm. And I was asked one Saturday morning on the radio to run a competition that they'd designed. You can fly to Sydney and win a meet and greet with Sarah Jessica Parker. Mm-hmm. All you had to do was find out where our breakfast hosts were having sex in the city.
Mm.
And so, I mean, obviously they weren't doing anything intimate. It was just a play on words. And we were dropping all these hints about the location that this activity was happening. Obviously it wasn't, but people had to put all the clues together and guess where this couple were fornicating.
Mm-hmm.
The problem, I had a number of problems with it, but my biggest issue was we're talking about this at a time where mums are driving their 7-year-olds to netball. You don't have netball in the US.
Yeah, but what in the world is netball? Is that like football is soccer? Is netball is hockey? What's netball?
Netball is kind of like basketball without the bouncing. And once you've got the ball, you're not allowed to move.
Okay.
I can hear the confusion. You're like, I don't understand. So in basketball, you pass the ball to one another and the object is to get the ball from one end of the court to the other and
into the net.
Into the net.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's the same with netball. It's just that once you've got the ball, you're only allowed to pivot on one foot. You're not allowed to move from the space where you've got the ball. And so there's no dribbling. Mm-hmm. It's a catching and passing game rather than a dribbling game.
Okay.
So we go on some tangents, don't we? Yeah. So yeah, mums are taking their kids to netball or to hockey
soccer. If you play basketball, you can just dribble it and then you don't have to pivot on one foot.
It's a fun game.
I'm just saying, Americans, we might have figured that one out. Maybe not the sugary cereal, but I feel like bouncing the ball so we can move our feet, like we may have figured that one out.
Yeah, we play basketball here too. Don't get me wrong. We do play basketball. In fact, Didn't Australia beat the U.S. last year?
Hold on. There's something very technically difficult going on with this right now. Is it coming in? I don't know what that was. Weird.
Something happened in Melbourne, Australia versus America's dream team in basketball. Maybe I'm wrong.
I'm going to invite you to move along, Justin. So essentially morally conflicted with what you were doing and that kids would be listening and then...
So that led to all sorts of internal conversations within the radio station about me and involving me, and I left my radio career. At the time, I was reading a book. The book was called Punished by Rewards. It was by this guy from Boston called Alfie Cohn, and it was intriguing me. It was all about the psychology of motivation, and I thought, wow, this is really, really curious. Correspondingly, I was also reading Meridian magazine. I was right into Meridian magazine at the time, and there was this wonderfully wise author on there called Professor H. Wallace Goddard, Wally Goddard. And he was capturing my heart in the way that he wrote about compassion and love and parenting and really bringing the gospel alive, bringing the scriptures alive, bringing Jesus' teachings alive. So I had these, I mean, Alfie Cohn is this raging, left-leaning, liberal polemic. And then you've got a beautiful, at the time, Wally was at the University of Arkansas, but he's back in Utah now. This Latter-day Saint who's talking about Jesus' teachings as they apply to parenting. And they both coalesced in my heart and in my mind. And I ended up going back to school as a 27, 28-year-old. I stayed at school for the next 8.5 years full-time.
Oh, my gosh.
So I gave up work. Well, actually, I worked part-time. I worked part-time about 25 hours a week and worked on weekends carting furniture, helping people move house. And I got my undergrad degree, and then I got my honors degree, and then I got a doctorate. I got a PhD in psychology. And I did it all so that I could learn how I could make my family happier, how I could become a better parent, how I could dad better.
So let's take another break. And then when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about how you learned how to dad better, how to make your family better, and if it was all worth it in your pursuits for that PhD. We'll come back. We'll do that in the third block of the Cultural Hall.
Hey, this is Jake the Computer Boy. Whoops, I meant Computer Guy from PC Laptops in Salt Lake City. You haven't heard me on the radio doing commercials in a long time because I've been learning all the ins and outs of PC Laptops, the company my dad, Dan the Laptop Man, started 21 years ago. I've been working at our corporate headquarters designing and building new computers for you. I design and hand build the new PC Laptops S1 desktop, and it's just $799 with a lifetime warranty. Each one is built to perfection, blazing fast and beautiful, and backed forever with a rock-solid lifetime warranty. And it's only $7.99.
Thanks, Jake. I love you, son. Dan the Laptop Man here. To make it impossible to resist, we're doing 12-month special financing on any PC Laptops desktop or laptop computer. Have I lost my mind? Call us at 1-877-596-7283 for details, or check us out at PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com, where we love you!
Here in the third block of the Cultural Hall, man, it seems like we were just talking just 2 seconds ago, and I want to remind everyone, you can always get in touch with us, contact@theculturalhall.com, or you can do as Justin did. You can find us on Twitter. It's @TheCulturalHall. You can find us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/TheCulturalHall. Or just search The Cultural Hall. Find us on Pinterest and find us on Instagram. It's all @TheCulturalHall. Would love to hear your feedback on this and other episodes. Email again, contact@TheCulturalHall.com. Justin, was your PhD worth it? Are you a better dad?
100%. Changed our lives.
What'd you learn?
Heaps.
Perfect.
Let me tell you in 30 seconds or less.
Yeah. I mean, so before we go any further with this, I'm hoping that this has been, and I'm not wrapping it out right now, but I want you to know, I hope that this has been valuable enough to you that I actually would like to come back another time and maybe go just about what you've learned. I want to talk about some of it right now, but
that'd be great.
But we are not going to have enough time to really get into. To all of this, so I'm hoping that you can that in the time that we have left, 10-15 minutes or so, we can get a nugget of it. But then for people who are like, why did you talk so much about the boot of the car, why didn't you tell me more of this other stuff, we can just do a whole episode with you. Does that sound all right?
That sounds just great.
Okay, so now we've taken the pressure off. We got daughters back again. It's sign language.
Bring her in. It's really fine. Wants that. Come on in here. Richie said you can come in and say hello. Okay?
And remind me her name?
This is Emily.
Emily, that's right. Emily, yeah, come Emily. On in.
Emily, put that in your ear so you can hear Richie. Oh
Emily, hello. Oh, there we go. Hi, Emily.
Say hi, Richie.
Hi,
I'm in Utah. Have you ever been to Utah before? No?
Yeah, you have.
You
we
have?
We took you to Utah.
It's not very memorable, so I don't blame you for not remembering.
Mm. All right, Daddy's almost finished chatting with Richie. Okay.
Daddy.
Yeah.
Can I have some ice cream?
You can have an ice block.
There's okay. One more.
Yeah, there should be. Go and ask Ella. I reckon there's some more ice blocks.
No, there isn't. I checked in the fridge.
Tell her about the secret stash. Tell her about the secret stash of ice blocks, Justin.
Do you want some chocolate custard?
Well, I haven't tasted that.
You go and ask Ella to help you.
I saw Annie have some.
Okay, off you go. I would never normally do this, but it's really important that we get through this conversation. So I'm breaking some of my rules.
Are we going to get you in trouble? Do you need to take a break and go help her out and come back?
She's fine.
Okay.
She's fine. She's
I mean,
just
you
great.
Made quite the offer. Not only does she get ice blocks, but also chocolate custard. Heck, I'm going to come over and get you set up on an interview, try and interrupt
so
it, and then
trouble.
I can get...
Yeah, what, I'm in so much trouble.
What's an ice block?
Oh, what would you call it over there? So it's like a an ice block,
like a popsicle.
A popsicle, okay. Yeah. So it's on a wooden stick.
Yeah.
And it's like frozen lemonade on a wooden stick.
Yeah. We call them popsicles. Call them ice blocks down there.
Yeah, in all sorts of flavors. Yeah. It's because like an ice block. It's like a block of ice.
Yeah. We call it sickle because I think We didn't want to say popsicle and just be like, you know, it's frozen something on a stick. So we just took the T out and made it popsicle.
I love it.
I don't know that that's actually where that came from.
It works for me.
Now I want to call them ice blocks just to screw with kids. You guys want an ice block? No. You have any popsicles? No, I'm sorry. We've only got ice blocks. Sorry.
It's almost another language, isn't it?
Yeah. But English, and you spend dollars. Let's go back. What have you learned about it, being a better dad since you got your PhD?
Yeah, let me share a couple of things with you. And it's probably a nice way to wrap up the conversation. My PhD was actually about the concept of calling. Can you have a calling to be a parent? We hear about it all the time in the church. You know, your calling as a parent is one from which you'll never be released. Your calling as a parent is the most is an eternal calling. It's the greatest responsibility you'll ever have. We use this language a lot around calling. There's an older movie starring Drew Barrymore called Riding in Cars with Boys. Mm-hmm. And in at the climax of that film, she has an argument with her adult son that she conceived out of wedlock when she was young and riding in cars with boys. And he's confronting her about what kind of a mother she was. And she says, what do you think it is to be a mother? Do you think this is a calling? I love that idea. There's a researcher at Yale called Amy Resnevsky, and she looked at what it is to have a calling in your career, in your work. And I thought, I wonder if that works in a real sense in a family. Do we actually have a calling? What I found is that once I built a questionnaire to assess sense of calling, a subjective sense of calling in child rearing, what I found was that parents who have that subjective sense that they are called to be a mother or a father, those parents tend to have higher levels of well-being, specifically to do with the role of parent. But their well-being generally is higher versus those who don't see it as a calling. They see it as a job. It's just like what I've got to do because I've gone and had these kids. The children of those parents tend to be raised with a much more effective and positive parenting style. And so essentially parents feel better about themselves and they're better parents. And I think lastly, the other thing that I found was that the children that are being raised in homes where parents see their role as parent as a calling, those children are more engaged in life. They have higher levels of well-being themselves. So that was kind of the PhD thesis. That was the dissertation. That was all the work that I did. Mm-hmm. But what really happened when I studied a couple of thousand Australian families is I found that there was a handful of things that families that are flourishing do that other families don't do. And those three things, fortunately, all start with L, so they're really easy to remember. The families that do the best, actually, a quick step back. Families generally, so when we watch a couple and look at how they're doing in life and how their family is going in life, when that baby is born, in most circumstances, assuming that mum and dad are together and that everybody's happy that the baby's coming along and the baby is born the way most babies are, you know, the baby comes into your home naturally. Mm-hmm. You kind of look at each other in that moment as that baby is placed into the arms of mum and you say to yourself, my goodness, it doesn't get any better than this.
Yeah.
You know, there's tears coming out of your eyes and you look at each other and think, oh, this is just magic. This is the most wonderful moment. It's transcendent. There are no words to describe it. And you sob and you pledge your love to one another and you say, it doesn't get any better. And within about 5 minutes, you discover that you were right. that was it, because all of a sudden there's the post-labor pains and there's the baby that won't stop screaming. And for mums, they might start to deal with some other health issues like mastitis. And all of a sudden you stop sleeping because you've got a baby waking you up every 4 hours.
Yeah.
And we actually see quite literally that having children does not make us happy. It makes us miserable because, first of all, they make us tired and they deplete us physically, but they also deplete us emotionally. And by the time they're 3 or 4 or 5 and they've stopped beating up their little brother or their little sister, then they go to school and we find out that they're not able to make friends or they're being bullied or they've got some sort of a learning difficulty or disability or, you know, and it keeps on going. And all of a sudden they become teenagers and they start saying, Mom, can I have a phone? Everyone else has got a phone. I'm the only kid that doesn't have a phone. And by the time they're 14, we find out that our 14-year-old son's been looking at pornography and trying to hide his history on the internet or is gaming too much. Or we've got a daughter who wants to date the kid who's a senior and she's only a freshman, and you know, all of this stuff. And as parents, we just go, oh my goodness, what was I thinking? It felt so good when I held that precious baby in my arms. What's happened? And happiness actually happens on a U-shaped curve. Our happiness continually declines from the time those children are born until they're about 16, at which point it hits rock bottom. And then maybe 17, but then they start to move out of home a little later, especially for Latter-day Saints who send their kids on missions, fingers crossed, hopefully.
Yeah.
And once they move out, all of a sudden we feel so good about life again and our happiness increases. And we're like, oh, this is wonderful. And I discovered that that's the pattern for most families.
Hmm.
And it's kind of depressing, really, especially when you look at your children and you think, but you bring me so much joy. You're such a delight to hold and to spend time with when you're not being so painful to everybody. but I found that there are a small percentage of families that do things differently. They flourish. They don't have the same dramas and difficulties that I've just described. They do these three things. They have these three L's. They have love, they have limits, and they have laughter. Mm. And they have them all in good measure. They look after those three things in really positive and effective ways that other families don't seem to be quite able to manage. The love means that, well, I love the quote, to a child, love is spelled T-I-M-E.
Mm-hmm.
They somehow manage to, I often say when I'm running my seminars here in Australia, just like dollars are the currency of our economy, connection is the currency of our relationships. So what's the quality of the connection that you have with your kids? How well are you really connecting and touching base with them every day? Do you have nighttime nurture as you tuck them in at night? Do you have some sort of a morning routine where you really get to connect? I mean, most parents in the mornings, as they're trying to get their children out the door to school, there's not much connection going on. There's only correction and direction.
Mm-hmm. Let's go. We're going to be late. Get your stuff. Come on. I told you.
What do you mean you can't find your shoes? You wore them home yesterday. Where could they have gone? And so love. All the Beatles said it. All you need is love. Mm-hmm. And then Yoda changed it. He said, love is all you need. I thought that was so much funny. Listen, you didn't even crack a smile.
No. I just appreciated it.
Thank you so much. And so after you've got love, and we could talk about that for ages, but I want to be sensitive to the time that we have. Limits. Well, we could talk about limits for a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems that as parents, we tend to not do a great job in setting limits. A lot of our limit setting is just do it because I'm the parent. Because mm-hmm. I said, I don't have time to explain this to you. Just do as you're told, please. Would you stop arguing with me? Just get on with it. I've developed this thing that I call the three E's of effective discipline.
You really like acronyms.
I do. They mm-hmm. work. People hang on to them. And the three E's of effective discipline go like this. We explore, we explain, we empower. So when we've got a child who's being oppositional or challenging, rather than going bananas, being upset with them and saying, just do it because I'm the parent, we might say to them, you really seem to be struggling with what I've asked you to do.
Mm-hmm.
This does not seem to be going well, does it? You seem to feel really strongly about this. And we explore what's going on. The saying that I have for that is that we get curious, not furious.
Yeah. Oh, I like that.
We want to understand, not reprimand. So we kind of step into and try to see things from their perspective. Once we feel like we really do understand, not just in our head, but in our heart, we might say to them, well, I feel like I understand where you're coming from. I think that I understand why you want to go to that party, or I think that I understand why you want to stay up a little too late or have that sugary breakfast. I think I'm hearing you. Maybe I could just talk to you a bit about where I'm coming from. And that's where we explain. Now, you know what it's like. You start trying to explain things to a child and they fall asleep. They roll their eyes. They're just like, oh, they're doing it again. They're talking at me. And so what I usually do is I get my kids to explain to me. For example, when one of my children wanted to have Snapchat in the early days of Snapchat, I said, well, you know, why don't you tell me all about it? I can tell that you feel like you're the only one in your grade that doesn't have it and everyone else has got it and you feel like you're missing out. What else do I need to explore here? So she told me a few things and I said, well, maybe instead of me explaining to you what I'm worried about, why don't you explain to me what I'm worried about?
Mm.
And so this forces your child to, well, once their mouth is moving, it will only move if their brain is working. See, their brain stops working once I start talking.
Mm-hmm.
So I keep them talking by getting them to do my part. I get them to explain my side of things.
Yeah.
Once that's done, we get to say, well, now I understand where you're coming from. I really get it. And now you also know why this is important to me. And we're kind of coming at it from different ends here. So let me empower you. What do you think we should do about this? Where do we go from here? And what happens is that our children get to work with us on developing effective limits and solutions. Now, this isn't some mollycoddling, some cotton wooling or bubble wrapping our children. This isn't letting them permissively do whatever they want. This is the hard work of parenting. This is where we sit down and say, we are going to have limits, but we're going to work it out together rather than me just laying down the law. Mm. And the research, so Laura Padilla Walker, I don't know where I got Young from BYU, has done some great research here. And she finds that parents who use approaches like this tend to have children who are much more likely to choose great friends, much less likely to drink alcohol or take drugs, much less likely to be involved in delinquent behavior, and much more likely to do well academically. Does it guarantee it? No, it doesn't, but it certainly improves the likelihood. It's the best way to get the best results. So that's the three E's of effective discipline. That's how we set limits. And laughter. Richie, laughter. Like, you know, I watch parents when they're with their kids and they don't look happy.
Yeah, right?
They don't look like they're having fun with their kids. Yeah. And I'm kind of like, oh, gee, you must not be fun to be around.
Yeah.
Like, can we just have some more fun? Can we laugh with our children? Can we enjoy them more? Can we tell them terrible jokes? Or can we wrestle or tickle? Or can we turn doing the dishes into a game and have some fun? Not a competition, just a game. Let's lighten up a little bit. You know, have a Valium, relax. No, sorry, I didn't say.
Wait a minute. I'm not going to. He encouraged drug use. Going to have to make sure. No. I'm teasing, of course.
So those are the three L's. We want to love better. We want to set limits more effectively, and we want to laugh more.
So here's going to be my pitch to get you to come back. I'd like to spend an hour talking about that. We talk the first block about love, the second block about limits, and the third block about laughter, and we do another episode with you in the future. Does that sound okay?
I love the sound of that. That sounds great. And you know what we can also do in that? I'm not sure if people who are listening to the Cultural Hall will know this or not, but I had a Facebook post go live on Goldcast a little over a year ago, about a year and a half ago. It's been seen by like 75 million people.
Not to drop a number, but 75 million is pretty awesome. It's pretty awesome.
It's a good
Justin.
Number.
It's a great post.
And it's all about setting limits effectively with our kids when they really want to do something else.
Yeah.
So we can go deep on that and have some fun. If you like our conversation, I'd love to do that with you.
I 1,000% would love to do that.
That's not really a number, is it?
It is. Here in America, it is. You guys don't get.
Wow.
You guys stop at 100 down there. I don't know. I don't know what the difference is.
You do things big in America, don't you?
Listen, it's super sugary and 1,000% everything. If we can do something. It's important that we as Americans can do it too much, because we couldn't just have it be like, you know, a good limit. No. We have to do it too much.
I love it. That's the fair income American way, isn't it?
There are three questions that we ask everyone who steps into the Cultural Hall. So I'll ask those of you now in parting. The first question is do you have a calling right now? And if so, what is it?
I do. I'm currently serving in primary and you know, I just have so much fun with these primary kids. I absolutely love it.
If you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or make one up, can be whatever it is, what would you pick?
You know, I think that the boring standard answer is I'll serve wherever I'm called.
Right. That is the most boring and the most standard answer.
But I would love to be the ward pianist.
Do you play?
Not at all. But if I was the ward pianist, then I would be able to, right? And I'd love to be able to play the piano. So that would be great.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah, actually, the other thing that I'd probably really love to do is, can I pick more than one?
Of course.
I love teaching, and anything where I can teach. You know what it would be? My wife and I serving together as young single adult advisors.
Oh, yeah.
That's the one.
Until you get into the lesson about like meet and then get engaged 10 days later. And then they're like, released, you're out. Sorry, guys.
What happened to all of our YSA? Where are they going?
Wait, what? The last question that we ask everyone, and feel free to interpret this question however you would like. But what is your favorite part of your faith?
What do I love about being a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints?
Listen. It's interpreted however you would like, but what is your favorite part of your faith?
I think, Richie, that it gives me hope. So hope, hope is associated with well-being. Hope is associated with happiness in life. People who are not hopeful are hopeless. Mm-hmm. If we don't have hope, in Proverbs, where there's no vision, the people perish. We need to have something to look forward to. And I love that as a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, I have a hope. Ether chapter 12 talks about having that hope that maketh an anchor. Mm-hmm. It anchors our souls. And I just love the hope that it gives me. Actually, you know, that reminds me, may I share a favorite scripture?
Please.
Would that be okay?
We have literally never had someone share a favorite scripture in the answering the question of your favorite part of your faith. So I welcome it.
Okay. So in section 123 of the Doctrine and Covenants, there's, I think, the most hopeful and therefore the most happy scripture that I've found pretty much anywhere in the standard works. And it says this: therefore, dearly beloved brethren, let us cheerfully do all things that lie in our power. And then may we stand still with the utmost assurance to see the salvation of God and for his arm to be revealed. And I love the hope that scripture gives me. If I do all that's in my power, which essentially means have faith and repent. Mm-hmm. If I do that, all I have to do then is stand still with the utmost assurance and I'll see the salvation of God and his arm to be revealed. I think as a parent, as I watch my children sometimes struggle with difficulties and challenges, to think about that scripture from that point of view, or any challenge or trial or tribulation that any of us experience in life, and we all do, such a hopeful promise in that scripture that it enlivens me. And that's what I love about the gospel, the restored gospel. We have this knowledge, we have this testimony, we have this faith and hope.
If people want to get more of you, either get at you, ask you questions, find books, whatever the thing would be, point them in the direction toward you. Where would they find you?
You know what? Probably best bet would be to visit my Facebook page, which is Dr. Justin Coulson's Happy Families. Other than that, I'm on Twitter. I'm a bit of a Twitter quitter. Like, I kind of get in there a bit, but I'm mainly using that to follow people like you and do the churchy sort of stuff. I've got a website, happyfamilies.com.au.
There you go. Jeez. Simple as that. Happyfamilies.com.au. A-U-U? A-U? A-U? A-U-mu. A-E-mu. A-E-mo. What is it called again? Emu?
An emu. The emu parade.
An
emu
parade. Yeah.
Yeah.
Listen, we talked about a lot of cool stuff. My takeaway, the emu parade. So I hope.
I'm glad that I've changed your life with that. That was the one take home that I wanted people to get from today.
Perfect. Well, we hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you're not healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat.